Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Family for Every Child's Conversations on Care podcast. My name is Amanda Griffith, and I am the CEO of Family for Every Child. Family for Every Child is a growing network of over 40 local civil society organisations working on the ground in 36 countries. These organisations have a wealth of knowledge and experience from years of working with children and communities to develop solutions to improve children's care. I'm joined today by Sandria Longwhite, Project Manager at Community-Based Rehabilitation Jamaica, and Amati Madri, Managing Director, and Cardell Hunt, Project Officer, both at ChildLink in Guyana. Today, we are focusing on local CSO advocacy efforts. Family for Every Child influences national, regional, and global decision makers to implement positive change to child welfare policies and services, with a specific focus on children being cared for in a safe family environment. We facilitate children and families to inform and participate in our advocacy, and importantly, highly value self-advocacy for those with lived experience. Sandria, Amati and Cardell, welcome, and thank you for joining me today. I'm looking forward to learning more about your advocacy efforts. And perhaps, Sandria, I could start with you. To begin with, can you tell us a bit more about why CBRJ decided to support parents of children with disabilities to become their own advocates for change?
Thank you, Amanda. I'm happy to share. In Jamaica, much progress has taken place since 1970, especially in special education. But there were still a large percentage of our children with disability who were not getting any benefit from the educational system. So in 1979, through a project, family involvement began in Jamaica when a home-based early intervention program started in Kingston. And the focus really was on the mother and the caregiver, training the child, with the family being supported and guided at home by a specially trained and recruited community worker. And during this project, it became really apparent that first, parents themselves needed more education and training. And second, that being a parent of a child with disability was an asset to the work that we were doing at the community level. So we started first deliberately selecting parents to work in our program. And so from 1982, with funds from the St. Catherine Early Stimulation Project, we started a program there. And when that ran out, the parent association from this project really decided that they wanted to keep the project alive, and they sought funding to ensure that the program continued, which provided services for their children. Focus on parents was very evident in the Caribbean region at that time. So because of the work that we were doing with the parents, it became evident that we recognized that our children were not, their needs were not being met, right? And they were not able to express or share their needs, you know, what they were going through. But the parents, like their children with disabilities, were in the best position. And as a result of their lived experience to identify what helped and what doesn't, it was precisely the reason why we decided that we needed to focus on our parents, the parents and young people from which the system needs to learn and change to deliver better outcomes and services for them. So that's where it really started, with us focusing on our parents. And from that, it developed into training our parents to become leaders, focusing on developing training programs specifically for that. And they became the change agents as it relates to lobbying government, having conferences, you know, liaising with other agencies within the community and within Jamaica to provide the services that were needed to ensure that their children's needs were being met. So that's where it really began in that region. So, and we have continued to focus on our parents because we realize that without them, change will not come. And that is evident in other countries also. Parents have been the change agents as it relates to improving services and letting the needs of their children be heard, and, you know, policies being implemented to meet this need.
Fantastic, Sandra. And I think what's beautiful about that is what you've expressed is that transition from and recognition by yourselves about how parents, as you say, are an asset to the work, and how they have this unique understanding of their own children and what needs to change, and therefore to then actually invest in their ability to become their own agents of change is a journey you've also gone on, but which has proved to be immensely successful. Thank you. That's really inspiring. And Cardell, if I can turn to you in terms of ChildLink, how did you build on this? And then how did this lead to the creation of the regional advocacy network? And what is the impact that this actual network is currently having?
Thank you, Amanda. I'm really excited to share a bit of our own work and how it actually ties in with the work that Sandria does at CBRG. Well, us here at ChildLink, we definitely believe in shared learning. You know, what one unit may have limited knowledge in, another may have more than sufficient level of knowledge. So with the regional network of stakeholders, we have actually sought to capitalize on this. As Andrea said, you know, they would have started quite a bit earlier than us in terms of working with persons with disabilities. So Jamaica is so advanced as it relates to advocacy and the overall inclusion of persons living with disabilities. Us here in Guyana, we're still learning, right? And so in this, we are actually learning from CBRT, learning from Sandria through our own parent and teacher-led advocacy groups. We've actually taken these learnings and we would have incorporated them into our own unique advocacy campaign here in Guyana. We have seen, just like in Jamaica, our own parents take the lead role in lobbying efforts, as well as the mobilization of key stakeholders and resources for policy change that they see necessary. I believe that this is one of the key impacts that we would have notably observed since we would have collaborated with our partners in Jamaica.
Excellent. Thank you, Cardell. And so, again, your feeling is very much that the parents taking the lead role in this is the ones that is so impactful in terms of achieving advocacy at a government level, which is obviously at the most senior and most complex level of change. Amati, what do you think ChildLink has learned about CBRJ's advocacy efforts, and where were you able to adapt this work to your context?
Thanks again, Amanda, for taking the lead on coordinating this podcast. It's a really critical focus on children with disability. When we started our conversations with Sandria, CBRJ, notably it was through a buddy visit, facilitated through family, of course. And what we recognize is that Sandria was working at the level of the community, was working with other civil society and other experts in the field, but also engaging very much her government, her local authority, as well as the Ministry of Education. And so the learning that they were having with children, individual learning within the level of the family, was being scaled up as a community practice. And then that is being taken through the education system, which was captured through their education send policy. And so we recognized that when we were going to take forward this initiative that focuses on children with disability, that we do need to engage at all of these levels. And so we have been able to engage with our education department, with families, as Cardell outlined, and really to run some national campaigns that are reaching families who are outside of our current local work in Guyana. We think that some of the critical learning that must be taken on board is to ensure that what we are learning from what parents and children are experiencing in terms of the service they need, in terms of how they're accessing the services, in terms of how policies are there or not there. These are learning that needs to go into our consultations that are currently ongoing with our Ministry of Education in finalizing or in adopting the SEND policy. So these are where our contributions are going at this point in time.
It's interesting. So you've added, is that right, a national campaign element to the work as well? And what does that look like in terms of the work you're doing at a national campaign level?
So we have been able to work closely with Sandria in developing a parenting manual for parents in Guyana. And Cardell and Sandria has been rolling that out with parents. They're developing a core group of parents who will then train other parents and sensitize other parents and help them to develop the skills that is required to support their children. We are also looking at how we have been doing some work directly with teachers. We have been able to bring in a consultant from Jamaica who's been able to train teachers within our education system to have the skills on how to support children who are coming into the classroom with mild autism. Sandria mentioned early on that children were not benefiting from the education system. And this has been a good change that we have been able to make where children now coming into the classroom, they're able to engage with a teacher who can develop an education plan for that child to work at the level that the child can work and be able to show progress over time. Of course, with support from the parents who are also engaged in the parenting skills education.
Interesting, Emma. So, and what you're, both of you have really illustrated, Sandria, Cardell, and Amati, is that although your focus is very much about the child's development and their welfare, the crucial thing that has come to light is that the essential thing is linking in with the Ministry of Education and looking at inclusive education. So it's that intersection between the family and the school system that has to be speaking to each other so that the child's experience is both positive, both within the family environment, but also importantly within the school environments, and how you've managed to sort of bring those two together by enabling parents and teachers to work on a common agenda in terms of inclusion of children with a disability. Is that right? Is that what I've captured?
Yes, it is. It is the actual work that is being done, the actual intervention that is being done with the child and the family that comes in to the conversations that we are having with other civil society partners, with the expert, and more so coming into the conversation with the Ministry of Education so that this could be taken into the design and the finalization of the national SEND policy. But I think Cardell can add a bit more on some of his conversation with our Ministry of Education and how this learning is being taken on board in that process.
Yes, I was actually going to come in a bit earlier when Amanda would have been sharing on in both spheres that a child, you know, is being cared for at school and at home, just to add a third sphere. Because we are actually looking at the community that the child resides in as well. We would have actually mobilized a lot of stakeholders at a community level and community advocates by doing a lot of public education and awareness campaigns in that same community. You know, so we're getting the teachers on board, the parents on board, and the persons residing around that child directly. You know, so it's more of a holistic approach being taken by all stakeholders and by extension, everyone connected to this child or these children, you know, for the overall policy change. You know, I just wanted to come in and add that as well.
No, that's really important. Thanks, Cardell. So that sense of this, as you say, an holistic approach that brings together the family, the community, and the school. And at the center of that is the child, which is really important. Sandria, just bringing you back in then, in terms of having you been the initiator of this work and then ChildLink really learning from you and taking it forward and adapting it. What's been the added value for you of working together with ChildLink on this advocacy? How has this been a sort of iterative approach between the two organizations?
Thank you, Amanda. The learning is not only one way. It has been two way, really. It has helped us to, in terms of be more focused as it relates to advocacy in re-looking at what we were doing, because there was a period when we had at a time a national parent advocacy group, which kind of died over the years. But what this has done is to renew our focus as it relates to ensuring that our parents are armed with the skills that they need to be able to advocate for change. So we have been revamping the parent advocacy groups in the different areas. And through the project, as Cardell mentioned about, and Matt mentioned about training parent leaders, because we really have found that parent mentors, parent support, parent-to-parent support is the way to go. When we have that, we have a more vibrant peer program. We have parents who get more involved in the programs that we have for their children. So you have better outcome as it relates to the development of their children and how they benefit from the program. So that's one area that we have really benefited from. But also as it relates to the project has really brought us together as it relates to reaching out more to the network that is around, support that is there that we can pull together to ensure that we provide what is needed for our families. So we have been reaching out more to agencies locally and also sharing as it relates to having joint meetings with our partners in Guyana and looking at ways that we can move forward as it relates to bringing about changes in policy. Also in sharing what we have been doing in Jamaica, because we have been doing a lot as it relates to partnering with the Ministry of Education, ensuring that the Disability Act, which was passed in 2024, and helping to develop the guidelines. And this act is to come into place in February. So we have been integral in seeing the development of this and ensuring that the voices of the disability sector is heard and the needs that are there are included, you know, are addressed in the act. So it has brought, well, kind of new life and energy to what we are doing. So we're glad for this partnership with ChildLink.
Great. Thanks. And congratulations. I mean, that's what you're saying is that actually this piece of work, which is, as you started at the start of this conversation, has been really a long journey for CBRJ, and then this fantastic sort of synergy that has happened between you and ChildLink to each of you strengthen each other's work, but has led to legislative change, which is absolutely fantastic. So the journey has been one that has achieved what one would hope for, which is but also, as you've emphasized, and building on Cardell's point of working with families, communities, and teachers, as well as with local and national government, but then importantly, sort of looking at this in terms of the parent's role is clearly one that has evolved over time too. So as well as being advocates, as well as being able to speak out on the needs of their own children, what I'm hearing is that you've also really sort of thought about them, as you said at the outset, as a real resource and asset for the work, and an asset and resource for other parents, so that you can really go to scale in terms of parents supporting others' parents, becoming mentors, and taking it forward. So at all levels, this is an approach which has really developed and brought in different aspects of that, if it sounds like to me, which is amazing, and also sort of really interesting to see the evolution of the project. And Amati, I wonder, and maybe Kyle Dell, you'd want to start on this, is we've now looked at how the sort of real opportunities that have started on this collaboration that Sandra's demonstrating, you've demonstrated in this conversation. But I guess what would be really useful for people listening in is also sort of what have been some of the challenges that you faced, either individually or within the sort of concept of this regional advocacy network that you've developed between you?
There's always been some challenges, and we need to recognize that with this particular target group, there were a lot more challenges. Working with any group of children within the whole spectrum of disability, you will find that there's significantly much more challenges. And one of the challenges that we recognized was that the children themselves were not in Guyana, the children were not diagnosed. The parents did not necessarily know what was the diagnosis of this particular child. And so some families thought that this child was just misbehaving, or that they were just a slow learner, or that they were just lazy. And of course, there were all different types of labels that was coming from different persons. And this is one of the things that one of the collaboration Cardell has been able to develop with our diagnostic center and help the family and the child to go to the center and get a diagnosis so that the family begin to understand the issues and understand the issues around that particular diagnosis. What we also recognize is that the children were again labeled into saying that they can't do this and they can't do that. But again, Cardell has done some advocacy activities where parents and the children themselves are a part of those advocacy activities, giving a voice and a face to children with autism and what they can do. But I'll let Cardell tell you a little bit more about some of the challenges.
Thank you, Omati. Well, I can definitely agree with some of the points Omati would have shared. But as it relates to the network, the regional advocacy network, usually with networking, there's always quite a bit of effort that has to be put in as it relates to accommodation, right? An accommodation of time, of ideas, of opinions for all individuals or all agencies that are being brought on board. So for us, a significant challenge that we would have faced is the accommodation of time for all of the parties involved. You know, it always posed sort of a challenge in getting all stakeholders to attend meetings, to committing to follow up and actually consistency at times. I do admit that it did make the achievement of goals a tad bit difficult, but ultimately the process continued. We maneuvered in ways that would ensure success for everyone. We got a bit more innovative in collaborating. So some of that innovation definitely included a bit of rescheduling or foregoing of our own plans. But I can say that we would have overcome that challenge and, you know, and found a way where we all could have achieved our own unique goals as well as the project's overall goal.
Interesting.
Yeah, and of course, with COVID, you know, and us using, you know, Zoom across the globe, mm-hmm. we have Jamaicans who are advocating in Guyana, and of course, mm-hmm. Guyanese advocating in Jamaica. So they've been in our panel discussion, you know, and a lot more people are able to come into the network. Initially, we were planning to have maybe maximum 12 members when we were planning this in 2018 and thinking about face-to-face meetings. But now we have a lot more persons who are able to be a part of this network.
That's brilliant. And it's segued into what I was going to ask about is the impact of COVID. And of course, always we tend to think that COVID's had, as it has had, really negative impacts. But what is fascinating to think that actually what it's also been, because of the innovation that Cardell's referred to, is, as you're saying, Amati, is actually it's made it more inclusive. And actually that fantastic interchange, I mean, how brilliant that people from both countries are actually being able to influence the advocacy of the other country, which, as you say, would have been impossible if we'd restricted ourselves to face-to-face. So Sandria, Amati shared the positive of COVID, and I wonder if there is any other things that you would like to highlight about what it's been like to achieve advocacy in this context, because I think many people listening will be saying it's one of the real challenges that we've all faced is how do you continue to do advocacy when you can't use the normal mechanisms of face-to-face interactions and meetings and conferences and things?
Thanks, Amanda. COVID, as you said, has, well, negative. Everything in life has negative effects and positive effects. And it's no different with COVID. As Amati said, and as you have repeated, the positive about the COVID situation is the opportunity through social media to connect to more persons and give persons a voice as it relates to that. There has been its challenges, yes, in terms of so many things are online now. People are involved in so many things. So, you know, to get another platform to be involved in as it relates to joining another group, another stakeholders group, is something else for persons to try to fit in their already busy schedule, because this has created, I mean, a feeling that we're online so you can come on, but it's not so in reality. So that's a challenge as it relates to everybody trying to synergize their time and fit in together as it relates to that. But it creates an opportunity, as you said, to reach out to more persons who we couldn't reach before, to smaller groups, to larger groups, to get the influence of persons in the region and internationally. to contribute to this whole advocacy situation, and also to get the involvement of parents who couldn't travel from where they were to attend the meeting, to be able to join us online and their voices being heard. And everybody has something to bring to the table, their own experiences. And it has been interesting as it relates to persons sharing, but not only that, so we can also plan jointly for activities. And that's one of the things that we look forward to in this year ahead, that the sector will be able to plan to better coordinate our efforts, because in Jamaica, there's so much going on as it relates to disability issues and disability programs that sometimes, you know, every week, every day, there's something going on, but it gives us a chance to pool together our efforts, you know, to have one voice as it relates to advocacy.
Yeah, I think also one of the things that we wanted to work quite a bit on when we started out in 2018, 2019, was whilst we're building the skills of the teachers and the parents to support the child, we also wanted to bring that in the classroom so that other children know how to respond and react to children with disability. And we're missing that gap or that component of it, because the children are not in the classroom, particularly here in Guyana, and I think same in Jamaica, we're not fully back in the classroom. So whilst we're progressing with teachers and parents, the other children who need to learn the skills of responding well and being positive in their response to children with disability, that's a gap that still has to be addressed, as well as teachers learning how to manage their classroom with a child with a disability in their classroom. So these are some of the challenges that we will have to focus on when we go back into classroom. Slowly but surely, we're getting there. I think one of the things that we don't speak a lot about, and we can't because we don't necessarily have all the information, is that children are locked away at home. And we have been seeing in our other aspects of our work how much more reports of abuse of children that has been coming to us in our other projects. So we have to assume that children with disability are equally exposed to abuse in their homes. They're not within the school system where it seems to be a bit safer, and it seems to be a place where they could do a bit more reporting.
A very important point to raise, Amati, because what we are definitely hearing globally is this, because of the stresses that are in place and the lack of visibility that's in place now with lockdowns and things, and the very intense and environment in which children are in when their whole family is at home, worrying about the future and about their economy, the financial strength, economy for the family, and things that this is leading to an increase in violence and abuse. And as you say, as we know historically from research, children with a disability are more likely to be exposed to abuse in different settings. So this is an important marker for us to be aware of, is that this is another aspect of COVID and lockdowns that one needs to bear in mind. And Cardenna, I wondered if you could move us forward now and start to think about, so what are the next steps that you're anticipating doing with this initiative? It's already clearly sort of really developed over time. Lots of new aspects have been brought into it. We've heard about the challenges that you're facing currently within COVID, as well as the opportunities. But looking forward, what's the sort of aspirations for the regional advocacy network?
Okay, thank you, Amanda. What I can say is that we have definitely been inspired by the disability toolkit that was developed by FAMILY. And as such, we're actually looking to present this toolkit to our regional network. What we want to do is to have these key stakeholders identify and align themselves with the toolkit to the point where we can all learn and have our capacities increased in the areas that the toolkit covers. We want to operationalize the network in a way that we can do some bit of mapping with the services provided across the board for persons with disabilities. We want stakeholders to know which organization or group specializes in what area, and how we can continue to support each other in the areas we may not have sufficient knowledge or sufficient skills to handle. So It's more of a strengthening of the network and a building on those strengths thematically for the best results for all of our stakeholders.
Great, thanks, Cardell. And then I guess sort of bringing this to a close is sort of, and I'll start with you, Cardell, since you're speaking at the moment. What advice would you give to others that would like to improve their advocacy work and start to collaborate with other organisations, particularly with this focus on children with a disability?
Okay, well, definitely what I can say is to just connect. Connection is very important, you know. I know many persons may think, you know, they have their goals to achieve and their objectives to achieve. But I believe going back to accommodate another organization or agency's work, right, through that connection or networking phase, I think that's really, really important. So my advice would first be to connect.
Brilliant. Thanks, Cardell. Sandria, what's your sort of takeaway that you'd like to share with people listening to this conversation?
There is strength in unity, in a united voice, and being part of advocacy collaborative is you're better able to see the bigger picture and, you know, to see where your perspective or theory of change might fit in within a more comprehensive advocacy strategy that's needed. So you need to get involved. Reach out to other persons in your network, come together and, you know, strengthen each other's release to advocates. And that really works to bring about change.
Sandra, it's very inspiring on it. So, and Amati.
Thanks a lot, Amanda, for taking this forward again. Indeed, it's a crucial point for us to do a lot more advocacy on. And I think what is critical is that we have the evidence to show that working together make a difference. We do have the evidence to show that when we are working with the right expertise and we are working with the right people and we are working with the people who have the passion, working with the grassroots, with the families, with the other stakeholders at the local government and national government, that this is how we can actually make change. We've been able to implement new strategies and new tools for working with children and their families, bring new information to the family. And all of that is sort of the evidence that we can take to the policymakers to say, this is what is working. And these are the areas that we need to give more resource to. We need to place more emphasis on. We need to create policies and create more access to these services for children with disability.
Thanks, Amati. And now I need to bring our conversation to a close. So Sandria, Cardell and Amati, thank you so much for this fascinating conversation. And just to reiterate, this real strong sense of the evidence base is crucial. But what I think, and this making sure that there's a unity working with others, bringing others into it, because you've really shown how during the course of this, you've brought more and different stakeholders into the process. And as Cardell said, that takes time, longer time, and you have to, and flexibility and innovation, but that's crucial that you've actually ended up by building a real consortium of different interested bodies in terms of children themselves, children in the school, the families, the communities, the teachers, the local authorities, and importantly, the government. And then others working in the field, as Sandria was saying, to really build a sort of collaborative of unity that's taking this forward and manage. And what both of you have demonstrated is that actually you are managing to achieve legislative change in your own country at a national level, and also change within those communities and within those schools. And what I thought was so beautiful that's come through this is very much a sense that the strength and the richness of your projects is being about really focusing in on the wealth of understanding that parents themselves can bring to this, and therefore seeing them as an asset to your program work, but also to the work of actually speaking right up to a national level. So thank you, Sandria, Cardell and Amati, for your time today and for your inspiring work, which is making such significant changes for children with a disability in both Guyana and Jamaica, which is fantastic to hear. So thank you for this. And thank you for listening to this Conversation on Care podcast. You can help us spread the word and engage further in our conversation and activities by joining our community on the Changemaker for Children community platform. Please visit changemakersforchildren.community to register.
The more users we have on that digital platform, then the stronger we will be in bringing the knowledge and understanding of local civil society organisations across the globe to change things for children. We hope you will join us next time, and thank you for listening, and goodbye.